Hey, this is David Kaplan from the Cap J Hood Show on ESPN 1000 and NBC Sports Chicago. Now get ready to listen and watch the Bulls 101 with Chris and Lero. Take that, Sparkles.
Welcome to Bulls 101, guys. My name is Chris Amundson. I'm here with my man, Lero Golden, on Juneteenth, now a federal holiday. So had that message in the beginning as a kind of remembrance and celebration of Juneteenth. And I just watched the end of a wild, wild Bucks-Nets game. Lero, what do you think of the game?
Oh, man, that game was, I got the criticism about the refs and stuff, but like at a point, man, the players, you can't put it in the refs' hands. If you got an open shot, you got to knock it down. If you got a chance to make a play, you got to make that play. And Jrue Holiday did that, to get to OT. He went back to kind of the way he was before that. But, I mean, that game was fun, man. It had everything you wanted. Stars came to play ball in terms of KD and Giannis and Chris Middleton. But it was fun, man. It was fun.
That was a great game. I mean, Giannis and KD both had 40 plus, and there's some wild shots, some questionable officiating throughout the game for sure. AMG Blazer, thank you so much. We missed you guys last week too. Our producer was under the weather and, yeah, sometimes it happens. So we missed you guys. It seems like it's been forever since we've had a show.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a game. Salim, appreciate you. Salim's back. That's how you know the show is back. Salim's here at 11 on the dot. It was Santiago, I agree. Really, really great game seven. Really fun to watch. Just, two teams just toughing it out at the end there with, there were some – not always efficient offense, but yeah, really, 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 really good game. It always brings us back to the Bulls, and it always reminds you of where the Bulls are at and how far they have to go, and to reach those heights. And I know they got, the Bucks have now advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals, but that felt like the Eastern Conference Finals a little bit, or even like a finals match, because those two teams were both powerhouses this year in the East. And imagine Harden without the hamstring and Kyrie healthy. That'd be a scary team. So yeah, I don't know. Man. Next year's gonna be exciting for that squad. But congrats to the Bucks on making it out of that series. What a tough series.
And you could even argue, man, that like if they could have fought and won this game, it would have been crazy because Brooklyn would – I think Kyrie would have been back off the ankle, and who knows, maybe the hamstring gets a little bit better for James and he can get back to his, ways of being who he is. But, man, Joe Harris, man, like for him to be such a great shooter, they needed him down in this whole series. But, like, today, I mean, he has some great looks, man. Oh, man.
Sometimes just don't fall, and, it's – Joe Harris has had one of the coolest jobs this year. He basically just gets so many open looks, and he's knocked them down all year. And then, you get a tough game or two like that and can really swing a series. Yeah, Salim, you're right. I think the Brook Lopez block on KD right at the end there was really key. Also, that when they had 8 seconds left with 2 seconds on the clock and the Bucks got it into Brook Lopez in the corner, what was he thinking, man? He was looking to pass. He got 2 seconds on the board, and he passed to Middleton. By the time it got to Middleton, shot clock.
Finally. You see Chris Middleton like, dude, shoot the ball.
It was like the LeBron, the LeBron to
J.R.
J.R. Smith. Yeah. Like, bro, let's go.
Seriously.
And I immediately said to myself, this is going to be a KD game winner. And it almost was if he hadn't put his toe on the line. Man. Almost going to be a KD game winner. So, yeah, what a wild series. But,
yeah.
So, tonight we got a really, really fun show. I know a lot of fans, including myself, have been really interested in getting to know Marko Simonovic's game a little bit better since he plays overseas with the same club that Nikola Jokic used to play with. And also to break down some film as well on Vasilije Micić. He is rumored to have interest from the Bulls. The Bulls are interested in trading for him right now. The Thunder have his rights that they got this year. And he's incredible. He's 27 years old. He just won the MVP and I think finals MVP for his club in one of the EuroLeague. So yeah, I'm excited to break down some film on both of them. Before we got into it, our friend Jason Pat, you guys know on Twitter, or he's one of the co-hosts of Cash Considerations with Ricky O'Donnell. He had an article on Bloggable this last week about the 2018 draft, but kind of in general, just the drafting of the drafting misses during the rebuild years of 2017, 18, 19, and then 2020 with, you know, and I wanted to kind of just talk about those 3 years, 2017, 18, and 19, and the picks and the picks we didn't make and the priorities we didn't have in place. And something I said in response to Jason's tweet promoting the story was that I think the bigger issue here was not necessarily the picks that we made, but the people that were in charge of making the picks and their priorities and the organizational structure in place to help these picks develop into key players for the organization. And I think that's where the big misses were to me, rather than necessarily, you know, picking Wendell Carter over Michael Porter Jr. or Larry Markin over, you know, those don't matter to me as much. Those, because I think if you had a great point guard in place already for guys like Lowry and Wendell, you know, a key offensive creator, I think those picks would have looked a lot better. Or even if we had picked Mikal Bridges, for example, in the 2018 draft, would Mikal Bridges be getting the types of look and the type of opportunities that he's getting with the Phoenix Suns? The Phoenix Suns have Devin Booker and Chris Paul, and also our friendly Tank Commander Campaign, who I love, man. I'm so happy for Campaign. I gotta say, man. I'm so happy for him. But he's got these creators that are getting him open looks. He's able to focus on his perimeter defense. He looks great. And Michael Porter Jr. obviously in Denver. So they went to the situations where they had an organization and structure in place to get them, you know, get them the right development, have the right pieces around them to develop them. So what do you think? Do you agree with my assessment, or do you think that the picks themselves are a bigger issue here?
I totally agree with what you're saying, because I believe a lot of times when you draft, you know, it's best player available. And sometimes you draft for fit. You know, you may have your point guard, you may have your shot creator, you may have your big, your skillful big. Maybe now you need a glue guy, you know, maybe now you need a defensive wing. Maybe not. So you draft, people take drafts, their route to drafting is a little bit different. So I feel like guys like, you know, if you want to go us, you know, guys like Wendell, guys like Lowry, I think those two guys kind of are guys that have shown you over time that they need a guard, they need a point guard that can get them into better situations, get them easier shots, you know, everything that comes with having a big time guard. And then you get guys like your LeBrons, your guys like Cade Cunningham, who we think is going to be kind of like that. You know, even your Carmelo Anthony's, your big time players that come through the draft, no matter where they go, they're going to be successful because they're just that good. They're franchise changing players. So I do believe that, you know, guys like Wendell and Lowry were hurt in terms of that, because especially Wendell. Because Wendell, he does all the dirty work. He's a good defender. He rebounds. He's helping everybody else on the offensive side of the ball, which is what everybody else that is really looking at. And, you know, man, he only had this many points today? Like, what? That was a top seven pick? And it's like, well, I guarantee you Wendell at some point gets a point guard or gets to a situation where there is a stable situation at the guard position, he's going to look even better. I mean, just take a look at what happened to Daniel Gafford. I mean, and I get it. Some people say he just played better himself. But you can't tell me that going to a situation where his fit is just perfect, you know, being around a point guard like Russell, who attacks the basket and commands so much attention getting to the basket, that allows him to just get easier buckets. And it takes a little stress off of him, you know, when he goes on the other side of the ball. You know, I mean, when he was here, Billy was asking so much of him, you know, in terms of, you know, when you come off the bench, I need you to be a hub, basically. And you're asking Daniel Gafford to be a hub. That just ain't good. That's not what he, at least now. Maybe at some point he gets there. Who knows? You can't put a cap on a guy. But
yeah,
that's just not where he's at right now. And fit matters so much. So yeah.
100% right. I mean, if you look at the types of looks that Daniel Gafford is getting in Washington versus what he got here, the ease of looks, the efficiency is all up. And that allows, if he's getting easier looks on the offensive end, that allows him to expend more energy on the defensive end, getting offensive boards. Wendell and Daniel Gafford were put in spots to try and, you know, be part of the offense, be that hub in the middle. Especially Wendell in the starting lineup was kind of with that, and Thad kind of took a lot of that responsibility off the bench during the beginning of the year.
Yeah,
but they're spending so much energy doing those types of things. You know, it's kind of, it's disappointing, because I think if we had a strong creator in Chicago, both of those guys, I think, would have done a lot better and their looks would have gotten easier. And I think, you know, on the defensive end, and I've said this many times, but Wendell is the only positive defender on the floor in any lineup he was ever in. He like rarely ever shared the floor with Thad or Garrett Temple or even Sato. It was always Kobe, Lowry, Denzel, Zach, you know, Otto Porter, who usually is a good defender, but this year was just not healthy, and he was one of the worst defenders on the team, actually, by a lot of metrics. So he just wasn't put in a position to succeed. You saw it with Rudy Gobert this week in their final game versus the Clippers, where they just played five out, and Rudy's Mac, you know, he's one of the best interior defenders. He is the best interior defender in the league. Maybe Joel Embiid, you could argue, is in that tier as well, but you saw what happened when the perimeter defense had no sort of resistance, and you had Rudy Gobert chasing people going from the paint to the 3-point line and back all the time. Yeah. And I felt like Wendell was in that spot so many times this year where there was just no resistance at the point of attack.
Yeah.
And he was by himself on an island, and with better team construction, you're going to have better results there. So, you know, it's not about Wendell necessarily, but it's about finding the pieces that fit with your organization and putting them in a position to succeed. When Mark Eversley took over, one of his biggest complaints and one of his initial complaints was that there was one person on the development staff. One. Like, that's criminal. It's criminal to be number one. So let's start with the 2017 draft. This is the draft when we traded Jimmy Butler. We had the pick. It was the 16th pick. Somehow we didn't just get the 7th pick from Minnesota, but we swapped picks with them, which is number one, the first embarrassment for, you know, Jimmy Butler is a top 15 player in the league and probably was at the time. Mm-hmm. So we got the 7th pick, gave up the 16th pick, and we picked Lauri Markkanen. And Jimmy Butler was our primary creator, right? He was the primary creator. So in return, we also got Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine, who just injured his ACL when he was in recovery, and wouldn't play until next February. And then Chris Dunn, who, as we know, is an incredibly gifted perimeter defender, but unfortunately has been very consistent in his career in every other aspect, especially in creation. So that was the return there. And then they sold the second round pick to Golden State for $3.2 million, I believe. And that pick ended up being, what's his name? Is it ended up being, it was number 38, Jordan Bell. Sorry, Jordan Bell.
Yeah.
And so to start your rebuild off with a trade in that sense, I mean, Zach Levine's obviously flourished and he looks like, I mean, he is an all-star and he's looking like he can be a key piece to a contending team or at least a deep playoff team in the near future. But in my estimation, when you go into a rebuild, number one, you want to take as many bites of the apple as you can. So selling a second round pick is insane in the first place. So I think that's a huge mistake. And then number two, Lauri Markkanen. Lauri Markkanen is a person, as we've seen, who cannot create his own offense. He relies heavily on someone else to set him up for 3-point shots or even in the post. And so, you know, that's, we put Lauri in a position, number one, without really a great creator on the floor with him and only one person to train him, right, to handle all of his development. So, you know, other guys that went in that draft, I mean, we got De'Aaron Fox went at 5. He's one that could have helped. We almost picked Dennis Smith Jr., who I think he's with Detroit now. Mm. But, Donovan Mitchell went at 13. Bam Adebayo went at 14. There's OG Anunoby went at 23.
Gosh.
So there's some other guys. Derek White went 29th to San Antonio. Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks was in that draft. Yeah, Dylan Brooks went. He went 45th. So apparently Dylan Brooks never made the scouting report for Garpax because they said that at 38, all the people that they had scouted were already off the board. They didn't have anybody else. Yeah. So Dylan Brooks, not an amazing player, but he's a solid rotation player on a playoff team.
Yeah.
So that's the 2017 draft. So missed on a creator there. And then the 2018 draft. This draft had Luka Doncic, Trae Young, Colin Sexton, Mikal Bridges, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, all in the first 11 picks. And we took Wendell. So now there was reporting at the time that the Bulls were trying to trade up higher in the draft. And me, I was thinking, it better be for freaking Luka Doncic. Mm-hmm. Better do it. They had also worked out Trae Young at the facility at one point.
Yeah.
But Casey Johnson reported or confirmed reporting that their target, they were trying to trade with the Grizzlies to draft Jaren Jackson Jr. But if they had been number two, if we had, you know, us and Sacramento had the same odds, Sacramento ended up jumping to the second pick. They loved Marvin Bagley. So we could have been the Kings that draft and drafted Marvin Bagley over Luka Doncic. Or we could have traded up and drafted Jaren Jackson Jr., who's a fine player. And I like him. I think I still think he has a chance to be the most impactful big in that draft, but they went into that draft focused on a big man.
Yeah.
And after a year of Chris Dunn, who I think even in that year didn't show enough to prevent you from drafting a creator position, you know, player over him. All right. A lot of people hate this draft. Not necessarily because of Wendell Carter and not because we passed on creator, but for another person that we passed on, Michael Porter Jr., right?
Yeah.
What do you think about this pick? Like, do you regret not drafting Michael Porter Jr. over Wendell Carter?
I think it's very easy to just without like digging in to just be like, how did we not draft him? And seeing his performances in the playoffs and things like that. But I really, once I found out and read about his back injury, the medical about his back, I was out. And as you saw in the playoffs, he tweaked his back and he wasn't the same player. He wasn't making the same shots that he was taking, things like that. But besides that, I'm not, looking back, I'm not mad at it because I do think that Wendell is going to be a solid plus starter at some point if he can just get a point guard in terms of on the offensive side of the ball. But I think he's going to be a great defensive big. And I mean, if it wasn't for Vooch, I'd be mad that he's gone. But, you know, so I'm not too mad at that at all, honestly, man. But like I said, it's pretty, it's easy for people to look at his scoring numbers and things like that. But then you got to think about the fit. He's got an MVP. And before Jamal Murray went down, he had another guy that was a stellar basketball player, had all these great role players around him, PJ Dozier, Will Barton, I can't even think of everybody else, but like Capazzo, all these guys that have a role. And we're really good in that role. And then you insert him and say, you know what, MPJ, you go do what you're the best at doing. In terms of in his game, like what his strength is. That's what we want you to do. Go score the basketball. It comes down to fit, man. And that's what, if he was on another team, would he be as efficient? You got to think of these things like, Portland attacked him in pick and roll and Dame was going at him. Like how would he look on a lesser team being asked?
How would he look here? I mean, if you put him on this current squad pre Vooch,
yeah,
our defense wouldn't be any better. No. Right now, he has improved his defense to his credit year. Doubt. I think he's absolutely taken strides. He still gets targeted sometimes. And as you mentioned, mm-hmm. the back issue, but do you think that if MPJ got drafted here, would he solve any of the problems the Bulls currently have?
No.
See, that's what I come down to. He's a great player. He's going to be a 20 point plus scorer in the league, efficient. I mean, he was projected to be that.
Yeah.
But he was also projected to be a guy that really needed the ball in his hands, that really, thought he himself as a superstar. And we've heard many, many reports out of Denver that those issues have recurred at certain points. He's slowly kind of developed into that role and been mm-hmm. more okay with it as he's, improved. But, there were some role issues at the front. As you mentioned, the medicals. Now, the Bulls were the only team provided the medical reports for MPJ. That's what we heard, at least at the time, because he really wanted to be drafted here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we would have regretted drafting. Like, he would have been a great draft pick.
Yeah.
But would we have won? Would he be more valuable to this organization than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
No.
Right?
Like,
so,
no.
I think Shai or even Mikal Bridges, right?
Yeah.
Now, Mikal Bridges isn't necessarily like the scorer that MPJ is, but as a two-way player wing who can do it all.
Yeah.
I mean, but once again, do we even know if MPJ would be in playing condition at this point if we had the Bulls medical staff on the job?
Mm.
I mean, one spinal tap and you're done.
Yeah.
So
that's really something to think about though, man. Like usually like sometimes when people say, when you say that about any other organization, it's kind of like a joke, but like with us, you really have to think about that.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. And I think my hope is that with the new regime in place, and the turnover of some of that staff and the improvement and acquisition of more training staff and development staff, I'm really, really hopeful that that trend stops, starts to reverse itself, because we've had terrible medical staff, terrible development staff for years. I mean, the only two people who have really developed while they were in Chicago are Jimmy Butler and Zach LaVine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it speaks way more to their work ethic and their off-season off-season plans than anything that happens in our building, right? As the Bulls like to say. I'm hoping that's going to change. But this year, even we saw very, very little development from, at least in the beginning of the year, from Kobe and Lowry and Wendell. I thought there was some development, but just you're not seeing those leaps and those improvements. Like when all three of them came into the year, did anything pop out to you as like, wow, they must have worked on that skill over the offseason? No, they look like just the same players.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the thing is the 2018 draft, I think, was the biggest miss as far as the Bulls should have been able to draft a quality creator in that draft, whether it was Luka or Trey or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and they could have come out with Mikal Bridges. Yeah, a lot of people, I think most fans were really high on MPJ at the time and were really mad about the pick, and a lot of them ended up blaming Wendell. I mean, Wendell had no control over where he got picked. I think that was part of it, Santiago, is that the Bulls were probably very wary of drafting anybody with injury concerns, especially I think Embiid at the time was still kind of there was still like an injury watch on Embiid as well, and he was picked high, and so it wasn't a great time for that kind of thing. But yeah, I ultimately think that the 2018 draft in that sense was tough. And then finally we got the 2019 draft. This is the draft with Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, who are now both in that primary creation role on their teams. We got RJ Barrett, DeAndre Hunter, who have been really, really solid wings. And then Darius Garland was someone who I was kind of high on at the time as a point guard for us. He had a really, really rough first season, but he's really come around and he's become a pretty nice player for the Cavaliers next to Colin Sexton. Long live Sexland, by the way. The Cavs are finally embracing it as of like this week. So that was nice. Let's see, any others in this one? I don't think there are any other ones in that draft that were kind of creators, but I think the Grizzlies were pretty hellbent on drafting Morant, and obviously the Pelicans for Zion. So I'm not as sure about that one, but I think with this is what puts us in such a difficult position now, because how I feel about our current position is we have a really serious lack of young talent on this team. It's basically Pat and Kobe.
Yeah.
And that's it. We don't have talent that we can really trade. We're not in a position where, you know, we're constantly refilling with high draft picks. And so I think it's a failure of the organization that we openly tanked for 3 years and got the 7th pick in the draft and then missed on all those picks as far as a primary creator. Now, Kobe has shown the most potential of the three, obviously, because he played that point guard position this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even he would say that his natural position is probably not that, but more of a scorer. Now, he can certainly mold into that role. And we talked with Will White about his growth. Yeah. I still think he's got a lot of growth to go. But it's really hamstrung the Bulls in their rebuild. Is they did this rebuild, and now they're moving forward and trying to, you know, push into the win now mode, and still don't have a primary creator like the, you know, because it's like the Hawks, for example. They could push all their chips in around Trae Young because they knew Trae Young was that guy. Same with Luka. We've seen both of them in the playoffs this year. Ja Morant, same thing. The Bulls, they tanked. Nico Mirotic ruined one of them. We had Sean Kill draft pick. It was his nickname in that year as well. It's been a little rough, and I think that's one of the biggest issues that we face now, and we're still suffering from, is the incompetence of the previous regime.
Yeah. It's so tough. Like, looking back at a couple of those drafts now, like I love Wendell and he's always going to be a big time player. Back when I played 2K heavy, I used to wear my Wendell Carter Jr. jersey on in the park, you know, everything. But anyway, no, but thinking about like SGA, man, like if like, yeah, you could be mad about Luka, Trey, you know, whatever, but like SJ going where he did go, it's something to think about. It, you know what I mean? It's like, man, imagine SGA on this roster right now, man. That'd have been fun to see. Even like you said, Bridges too. Bridges, Mikal. Like that would have been a nice pickup as well, man.
Well, you know, we have a chance for the basketball gods to grant us a small boon this coming week. if we get into the top four and keep that pick. Now, I think we'd have to get either pick one to get Cade or pick three to get Suggs. Maybe Jalen Green would go three and he would fall to four with Mobley at two. That seems to be kind of the consensus. You know, I never know. I mean, obviously, Pat was not the consensus number four, and that's where that's who they picked this year. But I think Cade and Suggs have the opportunity to right that wrong and allow us to really take this rebuild into championship contention. Because if you listen to the Big Red Bus with Doug Tonis and Fred Pfeiffer, Seared Fred, Doug Tonis has been very, very low on the Vooch trade because he feels like there's a ceiling on this team. Getting Cade or Suggs, I think, would open that ceiling for us and allow us to really move forward, because with a primary creator there, I think long term, we'd be in a much, much better position to succeed. It would help Zach to play more off ball because he's killer, killer, killer off ball. Mm-hmm. Vooch is obviously very versatile offensively. He can really navigate through anything you throw at him. And Pat would develop. Any backup big would develop really, really well with someone around him. So I know we belabor this. I belabor this, but it was just something I was thinking about and really the reason for the Bulls' woes today have a lot to do with how they botched that whole rebuild process by selling picks, by not putting all the chips in for a creator at the time and focusing on fit, right? They were trying to find a fit next to Lowry, and that's why they got Wendell. They thought he could be, you know, a great fit next to him. But both of those guys needed a point guard, needed a creator on the roster, and we just we cut Spencer Dinwiddie for no reason. So that was it's 37 years ago. Bulls trapped for Michael Jordan. Please, basketball gods, please.
Even obviously I got to bring him up. Even Rose, when we weren't supposed to even get him. You know what I mean? So
I know. And we have not had a real point guard since. And even Rose, you could argue, is less a traditional point guard and more of like a Dame type point guard, right? A score first option. So I really hope it changes. We really need the basketball gods to smile upon us for the first time in a long time. Please, please.
Guilty. Shout out our boy Guilty, man. But it's funny. My cousin Mario, I want to say late 90s, early 2000s, used to work out with the big guard you guy, the Olin Simplest guy. And he has nothing but good things to say about him. So, Pat is in good hands, they say. So we'll see how it goes, man. That is my
biggest hope. Pat, I really think he's a great draft pick. I really do believe in him and his ability to be our Mikal Bridges or our Jeremy Grant and more. I think he has the creation tools in his belt if he develops them to become, you know, more of a Kawhi PG, Jimmy Butler type of creator, a big wing creator down the line. You know, I still think that's a couple years away, but I'm really excited for his development. And I know he and Zach are working hard this offseason together.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
It's supposed to be Kobe, but you know. Hey, man. Just get well, Kobe. Just get well.
Prayers up to Kobe.
Yeah, man. Get well, man. Dang. Been nice to get that boy some nice work with Zach, man.
Yeah. But it's all right. Salim, missed it. Yeah, Salim. So Zach mentioned that he had invited Pat and Kobe to spend like a week or two with him this offseason, working out with him in his compound in Seattle, I think it was. So, and I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. So Kobe was supposed to go as well, but obviously he's going to have to rehab that shoulder injury. Yeah. So, you know, we wish Kobe the best. Terrible, terrible news.
Yeah, man.
But, you know, so that lends us to the need for that. That creator is still a need that, as we've talked about, point of attack defender, but we also have to probably find a Lowry replacement. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people have talked about Marko Simonovic as that Lowry replacement.
Yeah.
So he's a, you know, cause he's a tall European guy that can shoot the basketball. And, you know, we really wanted to dive into some film. I know we both watched some recent games that he had with his team, KK Mega. Can't remember KK Mega something.
It was B-Max, but I guess they were bought out, so it's KK Mega Soccer Bet. So,
Sure.
Yeah. So
they don't call it soccer in Europe. Come on now.
That's what it says on the jersey. You know.
So, all right. We'll
see. But hey, man, I'm just saying what it says on the jersey, man. That's all.
I want to get your opinion on Marco. What, having watched all this film, and I know we're going to get into film, we're going to have a specific breakdown, but what's your overall feeling on how Marco can fit into what the Bulls are going to be doing going forward?
I will say I showed you a few clips and of the game where he had the 19 and 20, and I was really eager to see that game. And I saw the game and he did really well on the boards. And a lot of that 19 was him getting to the free throw line. But watching it, especially on the defensive end, I was a little worried. I was a little worried because it was some really bad stuff going on. And I had to reel myself back because it was only one game. It could have been, hey, man, every player has bad games. So I ended up watching close to, I believe I watched eight or nine games. I can't remember. And my opinion has changed a little bit on them. I think that there were some games I'm going to focus more on the defensive end because offensively, I think we're going to have some fun with that side of the ball. I think he has a lot of skill on that end. Defensively, with him being 6'11 and a nice long wingspan, I haven't seen what his wingspan is, but it looks like it's going to be – it's pretty long. But defensively, if you ask him to get into anything other than drop, switching, show him recover, some maybe at the level of the ball screen, I'm a little worried because laterally he's not where you would like him to be. But if you put him in drop, he's actually pretty nimble. He's pretty light on his feet. He can move a little bit in terms of, like, you know, backpedaling and staying in front of the ball handler and staying the same level as the roller. He's really good at that. So in drop, I think he'd be great. And then obviously if he comes to the Bulls, it's probably going to be one of the biggest schemes the schemes are going to run. So I think he does have a chance of being a pretty good rim protector, at least a secondary rim protector. I think sometimes his reaction reading of the plays on the defensive side is a little bit slow, but then you do see plays where he's in the right spot. He's where he needs to be. But so things have changed after watching a few games of him. I'm a little bit more higher on him than I was after watching the first game. He's got some straight line speed, man. He's got some straight line speed. It's just the lateral movement. He can get up and down the floor. He's a better passer than I think Lowry is. I think there's a little bit. He only averaged, I think, 1.8.
Is that a high bar?
I know. But
I'm so disappointed with Lowry's passing, man. Man,
he's not afraid to get to the post. Whenever he sees a mismatch, he's going to try to take him down there. He does not have a go-to move or anything like that when he gets down there. But the good thing is that he's not afraid to get down there and use his length on his mismatches. I mean, he's a fun player. I can see why they drafted him. There's a lot of upside there offensively. He's so versatile. He can handle the ball. I mean, obviously he's not like, you know, any crazy ball handler, but he can you know, dribble handoffs. He can give you a quick move and get downhill. He's got a little bit to his bag. He got a little bit in his bag. It was really fun to watch him, man. He's a good shooter. He's confident. You can tell he's a confident basketball player. Man, I liked watching him. The more and more I got to see him play.
So do you think he could be a Lowry replacement in any sense of the word?
I think he can. I don't know. This is the thing. I don't think he only shot 34.7% this year. So I don't think he can be from as three? Good as from three.
That's almost as good as Lowry his first 3 years. Sorry, I didn't mean to hate on Lowry.
No.
It's Lowry shot good, like 35 or 36%
overall. Yeah, the dude. You know, he's got a nice, he's got a wonky like getting up to his release, but his release is really quick. Gets it off quick. He's confident in that shot, you know, but I think he's a better finisher than Lowry around the rim. I think he's a better finisher. But his shooting, we'll see, man. I mean, we'll see if it gets like that 40%. I'm thinking of Lowry this year, and that was what, 40 something percent. So 41, I think. So I'm thinking of Lowry in terms of that percentage, but I mean, I think he's going to come over and be able to shoot the ball. I mean, the offense they ran, they kind of just, you know, if he wasn't picking and popping or picking and rolling, they just kind of sat him in the corner. And he got a lot of catch and shoot opportunities. And most of the time they were, you know, they looked good. You know, at least the games I watched. Like I said, he's played a bunch of games. I haven't been able to watch all of them, but I was able to watch 8 or 9 of them. So in most of those games, I mean, he looked comfortable. It was a nice catch and release. He looked comfortable in those situations. There were even some situations of being a movement shooter. And I don't think Lowry was that good of a movement shooter, but I think he has some upside in terms of being a movement shooter. So,
yeah. So I'm watching the film with you, and what I watch as well. I agree. I think there were some disappointing things in that game, the 19 and 20 game that we watched defensively. Because sometimes you're like, oh, you're not even in the right spot. Like, you're not helping. You know, you're not showing. And then the rebounding, I was like, oh, 20 rebounds. Like, that's a really good rebounding game. But a couple of those in that game where he would get his own miss like two or three times.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was like six rebounds were just kind of like tapping against the rim. So it's a little inflated, but, you know.
Right.
I think you're right. He's got some skill with the ball. He had some nice passing. He's got good vision. So this is what we wanted Lowry to have. And what I like about this, and I always said about Lowry, is if Lowry continued to cost us a rookie scale type contract of $6, $7 million, that's great value for what Lowry brings. If you bring this guy over from Europe on a typical second round pick contract,
mm-hmm.
and he can give you any approximation of what Lowry can do offensively, because as you mentioned, he's got a pretty nice offensive game. And if he can be passable defensively in the drop, which is what we're running anyway, that's great value. That's great value for a second round pick. So I was a little worried. You and I had a conversation with a friend of ours, and they had talked to an agent that said that the pick might have been like a favor to somebody rather than a real pick. But having watched the film, you know, it seems like, okay, maybe it was, but he does have some talent.
Yeah.
He's probably worthy of that pick in general. So you've got some clips. You want to break down some specific things about Marco?
Yeah, man. If we can go to the second clip, I forgot what we named it all, though, but whatever the second clip was, if we can go there. Now, what I like about this guy, right here is him. Like I said, like, I think he's going to be a better finisher than Lowry. He's not afraid of he's not afraid of contact. He will use his length. He does a really good job of using his length when he's down there. It's not.
So he's 11 not, over here. He's yeah.
Yeah. You know, boom, one dribble. He's going up strong. Boom. Finishing like that. That's one of the things that I saw of him a lot. He was not afraid. Like I said, he wasn't afraid to get down there and go finish a bucket. But like I said, man, a lot of the things that I like about him, man, is he just, you could tell just watching him, he understands where he needs to be on the floor, on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, it's hit or miss, but offensively he has such a good feel, just watching him. It's just, like I said, man, it was really fun watching him. The more and more I watched of his games. Offensively, I love watching a guy that's so confident in himself. You know what I mean? Like, he knows where he needs to be on the floor. He's reading the defense. He knows when he needs to cut. He knows what passed him. He's just solid on there, on that side of the ball. We can go to the next clip. You can just, you know what, Aldo, just let him run. We'll just go through it together. What we got here, right? So this one here is one of the things that I noticed about him in terms of rebounding. The more and more I watched, one of the things I would always be a little bit mad at the bigs and the Bulls is it was when a shot goes up, went up. Wow. I can't talk. When a shot was going up, guys just turn and look up. They didn't hit a body. They didn't do anything. They wonder why they can't go get the board. This guy, as soon as a shot goes up, he's hitting the body. And that's what one of the things that I loved watching about him. You know what I mean? So as soon as the shot goes up, boom, he's getting himself in position. Goes up for the rebound and gets pushed in the back. Boom. Off defensive foul. Offensive foul going the other way. Defensive foul. Sorry. We're going and they're standing there and now they get a whole nother possession. But that's just because he does the little things. You know, he like I said, he knows how to use his body and use his length. And one of the biggest things is too that I loved about him, he's not a guy that waits for the ball to come to him. He goes and he goes and gets it, you know. And that's another thing I love about him. Obviously, we'll get to some of the negative things, so I don't want to make this like a Marco fluff show. But like I said, the more and more I watch them, the more and more I see why they may have taken a chance on him in the second round. So we got here. If you notice, if you got anybody that's keeping track of the draft and you know, the rankings and things, this game was fun to watch because Rocco, who's a big time prospect internationally, plays for this team, and him and Marco were going at each other all game here. But here, I just wanted to show him. Boom, movement, catch it. Boom, not too much with his feet. Gets his feet set. Boom, rise over the top, knocks it down. That was nice to see too, because sometimes bigs need a little bit of time to set their feet and get the ball up. But he catches his feet set. He's rising up. Bang. That's good to see. Catch and shoot, you know, is his deal. He will catch and shoot all game. He'll sit in that corner. Above the break, he's not a bad shooter as well. So it's like I said, this dude is going to be able to come over and add that right away. I think that's going to translate right away. I do want to see him against the league with more spacing, teams going five out and maybe, you know, going at him. I want to see how he reacts to that. So hopefully if he does come over summer league, he'll be a part of summer league. We'll get to see that. What do we got here? So boom, flip screen, another pick and pop, boom, catches it, sets feet, rise up, knock down. Like that stuff is going to translate right away.
Yeah, automatic, no hesitation. I think that confidence, that confidence factor is something that both Lowry and Wendell really struggled with. Mm-hmm. I think Jason Goff said it on the Bulls, on like Bulls pre or post game show a couple times. Like, he's too busy watching his feet instead of dancing.
Right.
And you want to be able to watch film of a guy and have him just be confident in what he has. As you said, he doesn't have necessarily a go-to move, but he just has those instincts.
Yeah.
He knows where to be. He knows where to glide to. We saw in that previous clip, he was in the right block trying to get inside position. Didn't happen. So he immediately kind of floated out to the slot, got that catch and shoot three right on, right off the bat. And he was just moved to the next thing. And there wasn't a lot of standing around. We saw that way too much with Lowry, even with Nikola Mirotic. Guys just kind of staying in the corner and waiting for the ball to come to them.
Yeah,
he's creating these opportunities for himself to open up the offense, to get the offense moving. And I think you see that more in the European leagues, that a higher skill level from, you know, all players. And you get a lot, because a lot of these guys aren't physical freaks, athletes. Like you get a guy like Daniel Gafford, for example, who is so physically athletic that he can just jump over guys. Or Giannis, and you get the James Harden quote where James is like, listen, Giannis doesn't have to learn how to play basketball. He just runs and dunks. He's a freak, right? I have to actually learn how to like dribble and shoot and everything. And I think that's, you get a lot of it with the European players, that skill is so much more important there. Because you don't get as many of these athletic freaks that kind of just go through the college ranks, go through the high school ranks, or, you know, dropping 40 in college just on mostly dunks, that kind of stuff. So I love that. I love the confidence factor, and I love seeing how quickly he makes decisions in his offense.
Boom. Just like I told you, he sees he has a mismatch here. He's not afraid. Uses his length, boom, over the top. He's not afraid to go down there. And we've talked about this on this show with Lowry. Why are you not taking these mismatches down to the block and getting easier baskets? Boom, they're switching. He instantly takes them down to the block. And that is what you want to see. I love seeing that from a big. And you could say he's more of a finesse guy because, you know, pick and pop, you know, things like that. But this dude, he understands the game, man. When he has a mismatch, he knows what to do. He is going, like I said, he's going to bring that right away. He's going to bring the understanding the game. He's got an IQ on that side of the floor. He's going to bring the pick and pop. He's going to bring the pick and roll. When he rolls extremely hard. You would think he's trying to run through the back of the wall, how hard he rolls. And that stuff matters, man. Here is just another situation, movement, catch and shoot, boom, sticks it. I just wanted to show this, that shooting is he loves that. That's what he loves to do. You know what I mean? He comes off here. It's seamless, man. He understands. Boom, boom. Rise up. Finish over the top. Contested, wide open. It's the same. You know, he's not afraid to let it fly.
So both Salim and Santiago here mentioned his release point on his shot. Do you think it's too low, or do you think that that's going to be an issue for him?
I mean, I don't think it will, because I mean, he's played against some bigger guys in this in a couple of these games that I've seen. Even some teams that play in the EuroLeague, and he hasn't had a problem. He's still knocked it down. I could see maybe why, maybe in it, the Bulls maybe say, hey man, we gotta move that release up. But I mean the dude is he was shooting that shot over some contested longer wingspans out. I believe the team was I can't pronounce the name of a lot of these teams, but Sabona, I think the team name was. But there was a guy, you know, Rocco, who's out there. He was playing some good defense, getting some contests out there, but he was still knocking the shot down. So, I mean, we'll see. But I can see why, you know, Salim and Santiago are saying that, though. But it seems like it's something that, you know, he's comfortable with. So.
All right. So you said you had some good things to say. You said he also had some negatives. So do you want to point out anything that you're worried about or things that he's got to improve on to make it in the league?
Yeah, so this is the biggest thing right here. So we got a pick and roll. My guy is just he's should be 2 feet in the paint right here. He's the tag guy. He's the X. He's going to be on the left block, and on the defensive side of the ball. And he is literally he's hugging his guy. We got a pick. We got a hand DHO, and he just rolls off of that. And he's nowhere he needs to be. He should already be there at the basket. And that happened so slow that he should have saw that happen, you know. So that's something that worried me watching it at first, because that stuff in the league, that's going to happen a lot faster. That guys are going to touch and go, you know what I mean? And if he can't react to this, that's going to be a problem. He's just got to be in a better situation here. He should already be there. He has eyes on the ball. He has eyes on the ball there. You know, even watching this now, again, I've seen this so many times already, but even watching it now, I'm still like, what is he look? He's looking, clearly looking there. So what's going on? Why is he not getting over there?
I mean, look how he's already at the circle before he starts coming over from the left wing there.
Just like, so that was something when I saw him at first. I'm like, oh,
here you go.
I don't know, man. That's a little worrisome. I don't know. And then the beat off the dribble clip, if you can show that too, Aldo. So here's my thing with this clip here. Marco's going to be on the left side of the floor here. And my problem is, as a coach, right? So I coach, the ball is out on the closest wing to him. He should be in an athletic stance right now and ready to play ball. He's standing straight up. And then when the ball is passed, now he wants to play defense. It's too late. He should already be in a defensive stance, hand in the passing lane, or however they want to play. Some coaches teach feet, and we're on the baseline, feet should be lined up facing the other way and keeping the ball in front of you and whatever. Some coaches teach that. Who knows? Maybe that's what his coach wants. But right now, he should be in a defensive stance and ready to go. He is not. He is standing straight up. And soon, then when the ball is passed, now he wants to play defense. It's too late.
Yep.
You know, and finish.
Got to finish. Yeah, you see with that, because he was not in the athletic stance, when the ball got passed to his man in the corner,
mm-hmm.
he had a little hesitation. And so he had to overcommit. He had to leap out there, and that allowed his guy to drive baseline on him. And then he got the foul and one there. So, yeah. I mean, if it's there on the strong side, there's no reason that he shouldn't already be in that stance.
Exactly.
And ready, because that's the pass he's going to be looking for. That's the easiest pass for that point guard to make.
Exactly.
I mean, look at it. It's right. It's just left of him. Yeah, too far. Yeah, he doesn't have his feet set the right way.
Also, too, the funny part, what I was telling you about this is I remember draft night. You're going to remember when I say this, but draft night, that we drafted Marco. Everyone's like, wait, we drafted a 30-year-old?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, who is this guy? that guy who's a 30-year-old is who was guarding him and who he was guarding in this game. So yeah. I think that would be kind of funny that you're guarding the person with the same exact name as you.
Some Marco and Marco crime over here.
Yeah, like that dude can play a little bit though. But so what we got here? So we got Marco, he's guarding the ball here. Shows, but here's my thing, right? So so Marco is on the left, you know, slot, if you want to say. He's a little high up. Person he's guarding picks up the ball, passes it to the wing. He shows over when there's a guy there already. And then when he recovers, he jumps.
Overcompensates.
He jumps like he's trying to touch the ceiling when, like, his wingspan would be just fine putting his hand up, you know, and being ready to guard off the dribble if he has to. But he kind of just pogo sticks off a shot fake and, you know, goes right by, you know. So, like I said, this is from the first game that I saw of him. This is why I was a little worried, because I'm like, this is stuff, man, that I don't understand, you know, like.
So maybe right here, right when he kind of fumbled, the ball handler fumbles the ball, and so Marco kind of looks like he's about to switch.
Yeah.
But by the time the ball gets to the other guy, it's clear that his defender has recovered, and he should be showing back out to his guy on the three-point line above the break. Does it slow, recovers right when the guy's about to take a shot, overcompensates, as you said, jumps in the air real high, guy drives right by him, dribble penetration, gets an and-one at the basket.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff is fundamental defense that, you know, he's 20.
Yeah.
You know, but those are, you know, this is all we have to go on, right? These are the concerns that we can have right now with these limited games. This is a big.
Yeah. So this one right here, this is what I get excited about when I watch him. Like I said, when he grabs the board, one of the best things about this guy is he is not afraid to take this ball up the court. You know, he's got some straight line speed, pitches it right here, sets the screen, and he rolls super hard, and he can go up and go get it. You know, takes it over the top, finishes, and he's, you know, that's what I like about him, man. That's the stuff I like watching with Marco. That's the stuff that I can see coming over to the league, is getting that ball off the glass and just getting it up the court and get maybe flowing. Like we saw Vooch do this. You know, if he has the ball, he'll flow right into a DHO. Maybe you flip it to your PG. You go set, you know, get into Chicago, whatever. Like there's some things that from that particular play that you can flow into stuff. And I like that about him, man. It's really fun to see him do some things. This is some fun stuff from Marco here. This is Rocco guarding him here, and he kind of gives him a double rip at the top of the key. Double rip and goes, and Rocco falls. Next guy steps up, and he drops it off. And this is stuff when you watch these clips.
Yeah,
you have to picture that's going to be an NBA big, you know. And if he drops that off, that's going to be either a dunk or the guy's going to finish through the contact. You have to kind of under, you know, when you watch some of these games, you have, okay, that was a great pass, but the guy just didn't finish it. But you got to, okay, that's a great pass at the next level. That pass is going to be finished. That guy is either he's going to get fouled in free throws, or that's going to be a dunk on somebody's head. So that was good. That's stuff that I like to see from Marco, just the half court. So this is Vasa, but here's the deal, right? Vasa is somebody, Chris. How do you pronounce his last name? I don't want to
mess. Okay. So just to be clear here, now that we've talked about Marco, this clip is from Vasilije Micić. So Micić. This guy is who was rumored, the Bulls were interested in him, rumored to be interested in acquiring his draft rights. And apparently he's looking to see if he can come over to the NBA this year. So he's a point guard, lead creator option that could be a really nice pickup for the Bulls, depending on the price.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you before we move on to him, and he goes by Vasa. His sister calls him Vasa, so it's an easy name for us to just for him to go by. But I wanted to ask you one thing about Marco. I didn't see much of him playing in the high post as a facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is kind of the role that both Thad and Vooch have kind of taken over. So his game seems very similar to Vooch as far as his skill set.
Yeah.
As a shooter on the block, you know, has some passing juice. Do you think that he can play out of the high post and kind of fulfill a similar role to a lesser extent that Vooch is doing this year with someone like Zach or Kobe being the ball handler?
Watching his games, he was not in that situation much at all. A lot of what they do is when they come up, he flows into a pick and pop, a pick and roll. And if nothing comes of that, he gets to the corner and then the guards flow into something else. So it wasn't like, you know, hey, we come up, we drop it off to the high post. We maybe do some type of action on either side. There wasn't anything of that, any like type of offensive hub type of play with either big, with Philip Putrisev or him. So I can't really say, but just from watching him play, I think he's shown a few passing plays that would give you some idea of him maybe having a shot at it. But that you got to think, you know, if you haven't done it, you know, it's going to be tough to have him come over and be like, hey, brother, here you go. Boom. Sit up there and let's see what you can do. But like I said, I haven't I've only seen 8 games, started 9, but there hasn't been any situation with him as the high post. Actually, I take that back. There was a game against, I don't remember these names. I can't pronounce these names.
Disappointed Partisan, you can't just pronounce all these names off the top of your head.
Partisan-ness, N-I-S is the last one. But
I'm not going to correct you.
I don't know. But they had Putrisev and him in the game at the same time. So they had him. Good one, Santiago.
Sbarro Pizza.
Yeah.
Shout out Sbarro Pizza. You guys want sponsors? We're open for it.
Right. But there was in that game, they had Philip and him in the game, and there were some high low opportunities because they were running some zone against them. They were going 2-2-1 back to zone. There were some things. And actually, now that you bring it up, there were some really quick decisions. I'm talking about catch it, boom. Like he didn't even have to think about it. So,
that's
good. That was nice to see, but again, that was just one game, so you never know. But the way he made that those couple decisions were enlightening. Like it was pretty encouraging in terms of his passing. So that was definitely. I'm glad you brought that up. I did remember that. Yeah.
The reason I did is because I wanted to see from a fit standpoint how he would work with Thad, because Thad and Vooch don't always work together because they both kind of play in that high post. As part of their offense. But if you can have Marco play, you know, play some high low or play off of Thad, assuming he's going to come off the bench next to Thad, I think that could be a really, really nice option because Thad obviously has his little lefty hook in the lane and he's really good off the high post. But if Marco can play some high low action with him or get himself open on the block or in the corners and be a quick decision maker and passer, that could work really, really well with a bench lineup of someone like Kobe, TBJ, Thad himself, and you know, anyone else we've got in that lineup at the one of the two, maybe Garrett Temple, Javonte Green, someone like that. So that's why I asked about is just to kind of see how he would work with Vooch and with Thad. Because if he's not necessarily a high post player, he could probably really fulfill the role that Lowry did, but hopefully a little bit more of a movement shooter and playing more out of the post when there's a mismatch, as we saw a couple of clips that he was doing.
Yeah. So for Vasa, that dude, talk about
a baller. He can play, man. I'm so excited about it. I am high as heck on that guy.
That dude, if he gets up on the Bulls, I love Kobe. I do. But I,
you're about to say something to slander Kobe. I can hear it every time. It's like, no, I'm not trying to do this, and then you immediately do. Not you, everyone who says not to say that I'm about to do this, but this is about what I'm going to do right
okay,
now.
Okay, let me put it this way. So Vasa is 6'5", 6'6". So if he could play the three, who knows? He's solid on the defensive end, but again, he's not guarding a Paul George or Kawhi Leonard or anything over there. So sure. can't be sure about that. But he's solid. He's very solid. But if he can play point guard, and I think he can, I think from these clips, from what I've watched, he is a lead ball handler, a guy that can get to the bucket off of pick and roll. He snakes the screens. He's got pull up game from threes. Oh, he's got pull up game from the mid range.
It's so nice. It's so nice.
He's fun, man. He's fun, and I don't know what. Well, I get what OKC's doing. They're trying to do the right things, but that brother should be over here. He can play, and I know I've heard for the last couple, last 3 years, that he has improved immensely. He was not this good 3 years ago. So that's also a good sign. That means he's working his tail off at his game. That's another good sign. So, but yeah, we can get into the next clip that you're getting, you had rolling. But yeah, man, he was fun, man. So this is a clip from Barcelona, the finals. He comes up. And he just look the way he handles the ball. He's comfortable. He knows what he wants to do with it. Right now, this play right here, right? So he comes up almost like he's coming off a zipper screen here, and he catches it, opens up. There's nothing. They're Powell and I think is that Nick Kalathis? No, it's not Kalathis. I don't know who that is, but
is that Mirotić?
No, Mirotić. Oh,
guard the ball.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know who that is. I don't know his name, but. He's doing a pretty good job navigating screens, and Vasa is just doing, he's making something out of nothing, man. He comes off, gets downhill. He draws some attention from Powell and Mirotić and drops it off. And, this is this stuff that right there, that simple play is what the Bulls need a lot more. They need guys that can break down the defense. Just sometimes you just got to have a guy that can just make something happen. You know what I mean?
So put that guy in the dunker spot that ends up putting a little floater in.
Mm-hmm.
If that's Wendell or Gafford, that's a dunk.
That's a dunk all day. And Mirotić got to watch.
That's a mean.
Got to watch out for his head. Yeah.
I hate to see my guy Mirotić get bowled over there, but you can see how little space he had. Mirotić was playing next to his man all the way up into the. But Mirotić got so far into the paint that he had to step up, and that little drop off. Just that little half second that he created. So that's what the Bulls have been missing is a creator who can create those little spaces, those little wrinkles in the defense.
Yeah.
And make plays, make everyone else around them better. That's what the Bulls have been missing. They don't have any players that make the other players around them better. They've got a lot of, Vooch is a great player. Zach is a great player. Kobe, I think, will be a great player one day. He's on his way. Thad is, was a great player this year, but they don't have anyone that has that offensive creation juice that can get people into those, into that easy offense. So I think Vasa's got, man, he's so fun to watch. If you guys have not watched him, you guys really need to just go pick up some YouTube highlights of this guy breaking ankles, doing this, the hardened step back. I mean, this guy is really good.
Yeah, man.
I think this might be the ankles clip. Oh, never mind.
This is just him just doing some nasty stuff. But so Vasa again is at the top of the key, gets a screen from Sanli, I believe. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. And he just behind the back on point to Rodrigue Bubois in the corner. It's just right on the money. Boom.
Behind the back.
And he misses it. But Bubois has been a sharpshooter in the EuroLeague or the Turkish League, whatever you want to call it. Whichever league I should say this is. This is like, again, man, this is just stuff that translates, this stuff translates, being able to come off the screen, get into the teeth of the defense, draw help, And, you know, we don't see guys making that pass every day, but the fact that he has the audacity to make that pass just shows how much confidence he has in that part of his game.
Yeah.
And there is, I want that brother. Okay. I would like this brother in a Bulls jersey. Okay. If we could get him in a Bulls jersey tonight, we need to get him because he would add, he would help Zach so much. Like, so much, man. But another thing is, right, so I was, like, looking at his numbers. Like, you obviously you see a shooting. But before we get into the shooting, this clip here, right, this is what I was – you see every time you see him play defense, obviously they have him as, like, a point guard, so he's guarding the point guard a lot of the time. And he plays a lot – plays against a lot of pick and roll, and he does a really good job of getting over screens and staying on the hip of the guy, locking trail. Yeah. And right here, he gets his hand on the ball. All right. So he's locking trail the whole time. Boom, gets a hand on the ball. Boom, turnover. They're going the other way. Like, you see a guy do certain things on the offensive end. And a lot of times as a coach, you see, like me, like I've been in tournaments, you see a guy that's just so good on the offensive end. And then you're like, okay, well, let me see him on the defensive end. Does he give that same effort he gives on offense on the defensive end? And this brother does. He's not as athletic as you would like a guy to be in the NBA, but he is sneaky athletic. He's quick. He's not as so much as fast. He's quick. Especially when he dribbles. And so he's a guy that understands how to use his body when he gets into the paint. And before I say this, anybody that's listening, anybody that's going to listen, I am not saying anything crazy right now, okay? But when you used to watch tape of Luka, right? I'm not talking about what he is now, okay? But when you saw tape of Luka, you saw his athleticism, right? People would knock him for, man, he's look at his body. Oh, man, that's going to translate? I don't know, man. I don't know if that... Same thing with this guy. And I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Luka. I mean, in terms of athleticism, I mean, in terms of knowing how to use what he has to still be successful. And I think this guy has that. He understands, you know, he may not be the fastest. He may not jump the highest. And you can tell that he's trained his game around that. He's not a guy that's predicated to trying to use his speed and get by you. He has a crossover he likes to use to get you off balance, to get in front of you. He gets in the paint, uses his shoulder, shields you off. Those are things that if you don't have the elite athleticism that you have in order to be successful. And I think that's what this dude Vasa has. And as you watch him, the more and more you watch him, you see it. He understands angles. He understands how to get a guy off balance and when to get his shot, how to get his shot. There are times, though, when he does come off and he over dribbles. Gets into the paint, has nowhere to go. There are times that happens. But this is another situation here. There's not a lot of off-ball stuff on him because he's always the lead creator. He's always the lead ball handler. Everything runs through him. But there are certain times when he's off-ball, like this situation here, and he's on the right side of the floor, right side of the wing, kind of floats down, catch-and-shoot situation, and his water. There's none but he can he can shoot the rock, man. He can really shoot the rock.
That play right there reminds me of Joe Ingles being wide open the other day on like a transition. Just we're not going to guard Joe Ingles on an open three pointer. Like that's what that looked like. But you're right. He shares some responsibilities, ball handling responsibilities with Shane Larkin, who used to be in the NBA. But yeah, that was the concern is how would he play off ball? But I think if he were next to Zach, so I don't know if you think that he is a starting caliber point guard or has the ability to be a starting caliber point guard next to Zach LaVine, assuming Kobe's out at the start of the year. And Sato clearly has not been the answer there. He's still a great rotation player and has value, but do you think that he would be a great fit next to Zach? I mean, defensively, it sounds like he and Zach could work very well together.
Yeah.
Especially if you bring in a solid wing at the three and move Pat to the four, I think your defense is going to be, you know, a lot more solid because Vooch and Zach are passable, but they need other people around them. You know, they can work within a system, but you got to have the other defenders there. But do you think that he can be a starting point guard in the league, number one, and how do you think he fits next to Zach offensively, given the lack of off-ball opportunities that we've seen so far?
Defensively, I'll go there first. Defensively, I don't want to go too far off. You know, I don't want to give a crazy prediction or anything like that. So I just think he's going to be solid. I don't think he's going to be like all NBA, all defense. I don't think he's going to be, you know, just under. I think he's just going to be a solid guy where you can depend on him in terms of not being in the wrong spots. He's very good at navigating screens. When he's on defense, he's not a guy that's lost, that's looking in the crowd or maybe looking. So he's connected into the game. He's got his man and ball. He's always locked in. You know what I mean? And that's something I love to see on the defensive end. He's just, like I said, man, he's just a solid player. Offensively, I think he could fit next to Zach. I think, like you said, he split read creator duties with Shane Larkin a lot. But most of the games I watched, he was the guy. Shane obviously had some possessions, but he was the guy. They ran ball screens with him most of the time. He was down there, and obviously, if any NBA fan understands that ball screen, pick and roll, that's the NBA. You know, that's what teams want to do.
Oh. But there, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's my favorite clip.
Yeah. He is. He's got game, man. And he's played against Daniel Hackett. He's, you know, guys that are good defenders, great defenders, and held his own. And I mean, the Real Madrid's not some scrub team. They're a good team. And he played some ball, man. He's not playing against, you know, some soft players. These guys, the EuroLeague, that's a very respectable league. And he's doing some great things. He's very solid. I think, like I said, I think it's a very good sign that from where he was 3 years ago to now, it just shows the work ethic. It shows what he thinks he can be. And to continue that, I think that he's a guy that could just release. Like, obviously Zach is still gonna, you know, run pick and roll and still have the ball in his hands, but he's a guy you can trust. He's gonna, you know, handle the ball. I believe in the playoffs, he averaged 2.1 turnovers, but I believe he was close to 5 assists a game. But he didn't turn the ball over a lot. He was not afraid to make any pass, but it wasn't ever like any crazy, you know, wacky, out of control, you know, making dumb decisions type playing. You know, understood. He was reading the defense and making the right passes, sometimes really flashy passes. But he's solid, and I think he's a guy that if he gets over to the league, he'll fit right in. And I think he's just, like, I'll just continue to say, I think he's just really solid, man. He's really solid. I think he's Sato. If you could think of Sato, but just have more creation juice, a lot more creation juice. And he might be a better shooter.
Yeah, that's what it seems like Sato is missing is really the self-creation. I mean, mm-hmm. Sato's a great passer. He makes the right play. He's got the size. But if, you know, and he's a smart defender.
Yeah.
But if Micić has those skills and the self-creation, that's really what Sato has been lacking. That's why Sato hasn't really worked out to his full potential in that starting lineup. Also, because he just doesn't have that creation juice.
He's not afraid to shoot the ball. He's going to shoot the ball.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that's something that I know some fans with Sato were mad, like, oh, he doesn't shoot. No, he's going to shoot the ball. If he's open, it's going to go down. He's going to put it up. So that's what I like about him as well, man. He's like I said, look at that range. Catch and shoot, bang. Like, he's just fun.
Would you say he's solid?
He's solid. he's solid, man. Do we have any of these downhill clips that we had uploaded, Aldo?
We'll check on that real quick. But I think this is the type of value signing. This is the type of international scouting that we really, really need. We need to make these types of moves on the margin to improve our roster. And we had Steph Noh on a couple weeks ago to talk about the cap situation, what an offseason might look like. the kind of person you can bring in, you know, to, you know, like Denver brought in Campazzo, right? And it played a really, really key role for them and wasn't really on the radar of a lot of teams in the league.
Yeah.
This is the type of guy that can really, you know, if we can get his rights from the Sixers, I'm sorry, the Sixers, the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think the Sixers had his rights previously this year.
Yeah, I think so.
OKC obviously doesn't have a big need for him right now, but we do. Yeah. And if we can get his rights for some reasonable price and be able to bring him over, I think he could play a 20 plus minute role on the Bulls in a starting role or off the bench and really, really help what we've needed for a long time, which is solid point of attack defense and some self-creation to make the looks easier for Zach, for Vooch, for everyone else on the team. So if we've got those clips, let's see if we can bring that up.
Let's see here. This one is – oh, this is just the drop-off clip here. But there were some clips that I found, just like I said, from watching the games that I did watch, that he did have some you know, most of the time guys that are really good at getting a shot off. No, I shouldn't say most of the time, but sometimes there are guys that just are really good at finding their shot off screens and shooting just for out. They may not have the juice to get downhill and go finish. And he does. He has the ability. You have to respect him as a ball handler. You have to respect him as a shooter. So guys are not going to be able to go under the screen. You're going to have to respect that. And he does a really good job of snaking screens and getting to his pull-up shot. He has a pretty good mid-range game. So it's obviously we know the passing chops. So we've seen the passing chops. So he's a fun player, man. He's a guy that you can just toss the ball to and just have him lead create, man. He's pretty good. So
well, that's awesome. I know we had fun looking through these clips. It's always fun to look into someone, a talent that you haven't really heard of before or haven't really spent a lot of time, and to know that Marko Simonovic is available and you know that could be under contract with us this year, and then Micić might be available through trade this offseason. These are the types of moves that can get you excited to fill in, you know, those rotation spots that we've been missing. We've got some holes to fill at the lead creator spot, you know, at point of attack defense and at the wing, and also some backup big. And so if Marko can fill a backup big role to some extent next to Thad or next to, Alfred Aminu or something like that. And if Micić can help with that lead guard and point of attack role, those are both going to be value signings. People, we don't have to overpay. You know, it's not a Lonzo Ball you have to pay $20+ million to in free agency, or even, Dennis Schroeder, things like that. Also, I wanted to ask you just real quick before we go. So Reggie Jackson's on a minimum deal right now, and that guy, he really showed out in the playoffs. He really showed out this series. So I just wanted to see. I mean, he's another guy. I think, I don't know. These are the types of value options I think might be available for the Bulls.
Reggie has been fun, man. I mean, he showed his ability. He showed he's continuing to show his ability, being able to knock down the three ball, tough shots too. A lot of these threes he's knocking down are some tough shots, but his ability to get downhill and make the right reads, make the right passes. Granted, it was pretty easy against Utah because what I mean by that is wherever Rudy helped from, that's where you would go. Rudy's just so used to protecting the paint that's his first instinct to go, you know. So, but I mean, man, Reggie was really good, man. I mean,
yeah, he took advantage because Mitchell and Conley were both injured, very, very limited, and they aren't great. I mean, Conley has been a great defender throughout his career.
Yeah.
But neither are in a position to really provide that defense, and they just played five out, and Reggie Jackson found the open man. Speaking of man, Terrence Mann.
I know, man.
Game of his life. It's you know, bummed to see a team like Utah go down after Kawhi goes out in those circumstances, and they – didn't have Conley for the whole series except the last game, but it was fun to see Reggie Jackson show out, and we'll see what the Clippers do. First time in their history that they're making the conference finals. It's wild that the Clippers make the conference finals and they play CP3 on the other end, who was part of the Clippers for a while. And the finals could be against Doc coaching the Sixers, but it could have been until tonight. It could have been the Nets with Blake Griffin. So it's kind of funny that the Clippers have all coming together,
yeah,
in these playoffs. It's wild that curse lasted for so long. So
yeah, man. Yeah. What also? Why? Kawhi tore his ACL, right?
We don't know for sure. It's some sort of ACL sprain. So there's okay. different grades. If it's a grade one, it's a really minor sprain.
Okay.
You know, grade three is what we usually think of as a torn ACL. It's a full tear, and then grade two is a partial tear. So if it's a grade three sprain, then yeah, he's gonna be out for a long time. If it's a grade one, Jay Crowder, I believe, had it a few years ago when I think he got smacked in the face by somebody and like fell weird and sprained his mm-hmm. ACL, but they got knocked out of that series, so it wasn't very long of a recovery period, but they never played. So I don't know. He's probably going to be out for the whole conference finals.
I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the updates and they're like, Kawhi Leonard is considered out. I'm out for game one. And I'm like, wait, isn't he already out? Like, is his ACL's gone? But now it makes sense. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. They haven't confirmed it. I'm not sure why it shouldn't. Anyways, I'm not sure why it hasn't been confirmed, but it's some sort of ACL sprain.
Yeah.
Jordan Guilty, our guy Guilty, has a question. Are you guys fine with losing everyone on the team outside of Zach, even losing Pat Vooch? Pat, I think, is a guy you have to trade for a all-star caliber talent that's going to help Zach and Vooch reach their potential, I think. That's what would make sense to me. Otherwise, Pat is going to fit really, really well. He's one of the few young talents we have on the team at a reasonable price. So I think it would take a lot to move Pat. I know there was some Ben Simmons trade rumors floating around. I know you love Ben Simmons, Lero, but
I do.
It would have to be something of that caliber or more, I think, in order for me to feel comfortable moving Pat at this point in his career. We'll see. Well, you know, I don't want to be the guy that's like, well, I would like James Harden, but I'm not willing to trade Tyler Hero, and then Tyler Hero turns into a pumpkin the next year.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff. But I do feel like Pat has a lot of potential. We'll see. But that's what it would be for me. Santiago's got a question. You think Donovan will be like Doug Collins, a bridge coach? I think that's what he was hired for originally. At least that was my understanding. He was the get you from A to B coach. Yeah. And then maybe we needed a B to C if C is like a championship or a playoff. But clearly it's we've moved into B to C range already, and Billy's got three more years left on his contract. So who knows?
Let's say, we got a question from Salim. Let's say Bulls get into the top four and are able to use that in a Ben Simmons trade. Between Pat and Kobe, who would you prefer to keep in a Simmons trade?
It's gotta be Pat, I think.
Yeah, it's Pat. It's Pat.
I think it'd be Pat.
Yeah, it's Pat. Will, if you're watching, I'm sorry, brother.
I think if you bring in Simmons to that lead creation role, he can play as your point of attack. If he can play at the three or the four next to Pat, I think that would just be really, really good. So if I had to choose, and with Kobe's injury, I think I would choose for next season would be Pat. So
I think that would be a good
question
for Kobe, at least, because if you're going to go with Gio Embiid, just the way they play ball in the post, catch and shoot guy like Kobe would be a great person to have around.
That's gonna be tough for them. We don't have time to talk about fake Simmons trades tonight, but they're at an interesting crossroads, even if they do make the conference final. So we'll see. So I think that's all we got for tonight. We talked about the draft and how important this upcoming draft is. Talked about our last pick in the second round, Marko Simonovic, and kind of where he would fit on the team. Mm-hmm. And then we were able to talk a little bit about Vasilije Micic and see how he would fit. I'm really excited. I really hope that happens. I know we got blue balled by the Lonzo news for like 4 months this year. They kept telling us that the Bulls were going to get him, It didn't happen. And, you know, it's still possible, I guess. But I really hope that this Micić news is actually going to lead to something real. We'll see in the next couple of weeks. The draft lottery is June 22nd, so this coming Wednesday. So if we do end up at the top four pick, I'll be really excited. Maybe we'll have an emergency Bulls 101 to talk about. You can talk about Cade or Suggs or whoever it is.
All the possibilities.
I know. But an exciting offseason coming up for Bulls. Really appreciate you guys staying with us this evening. Or if you listen to us at another time, appreciate you guys listening. Let us know in comments, in tweets, through our email. You can email us at bulls101podcast@gmail.com. You can reach both of us at Kayla Hoops, at underscore Lara Hoops, at bulls101podcast on Twitter. Let us know how we're doing. If you guys appreciate the show, think other people would benefit from it, let them know. You know, retweet our stuff, let people know where they can follow us. We're trying to get the word out so we can have, you know, even better guests, better content for you guys, and expand what we can do. So appreciate you guys sticking with us and all that you do. I think we'll sign off for the night.
Yeah, man. Hey, thank you guys. Like my boy said, man, we appreciate everybody that listens, watches. And hey, man, we are open to feedback. You know, there's no big headedness, there's no egos, man. We just love talking ball, man. So if you have any feedback or anything, man, just hit us up at all of our places that that Chris just listed, man. And hey, man, talk to y'all next time.
Yeah. Let's go.